Understood is a resource I have recommended for many years to parents looking for support with learning and thinking differences such as ADHD, dyslexia, and more. And I'm subsequently excited to tell you about their podcast, Understood Explains. This season, the show is hosted by teacher and special education expert Juliana Urtube, and it's all about how to navigate individual education plans, also known as IEPs. They cover topics such as how to tell if your child needs an IEP, common myths about special education, and the difference between IEPs and 504 plans. I love how Understood Explains breaks down the overwhelm by unpacking an important topic each season and then drilling down further into key basics in each episode. Most episodes are between 10 to 15 minutes, and episodes are available in both English and Spanish. So fantastic, right? To listen to Understood Explains, search for Understood Explains in your podcast app. That's Understood Explains wherever you get your podcasts. Welcome to Edit Your Life, a podcast to help you edit the unnecessary from your life so you have more room to enjoy the awesome. Through episodes with me, Christine Coe, and a range of smart, compassionate guests, you will come away with insights and tactics to help you find the agency and space to simplify and declutter your home, time, mental space, and more. Hello, friends. In a recent Edit Your Life survey, when I asked about topics, I received a slew of requests around a common theme: decluttering. Also, more decluttering. I did get some specific questions related to decluttering, but really, people want anything and everything related to this topic. It's clearly a problem many people wrestle with, and it's an issue that naturally grows when you have kids in the mix because, logically, more people equals more stuff, and with kids, the volume of tchotchkes can break spirits. I have a great guest for you today who is going to help answer some of these questions. Deanna Yates is the creative force behind Wannabe Clutter Free, a resource website and podcast. Deanna teaches busy families how to declutter the mess, calm the chaos, and organize the stuff that's left behind so you can focus on what truly matters. How values aligned is that? Let's have a listen. Welcome, Deanna. I'm so excited to talk to you today. Hello.
Hello, Christine. How are you?
I'm great. Okay, Deanna, let's jump right in, because as I mentioned in the introduction, the desire to declutter is expansive. I have had many listeners on the Edit Your Life survey tell me that they want decluttering content. Sometimes it's just one word, decluttering. Sometimes it's more specific. And it's a very common pain point, as you know, especially for families. People are hungry for calm and, you know, less stuff. So I wanted to start kind of big picture to start here and ask, can you share your big picture perspective on why we as a culture acquire so much stuff when we don't want so much stuff? And actually, relatedly, if you have a litmus test for acquisition to keep accumulation at bay?
Oh, so, well, both really great questions. And yes, I agree. It really is. We've gotten to this point where everything is so easy to acquire that we just acquire because it's right there. It's at our fingertips. It's in our pocket all day long on our phone. We can be out and about at the park with our kids and be like, oh, the Frisbee just broke. This is an example from my life. The Frisbee just broke. I can pull my phone up, pull up Amazon, get the replacement, and have it at our door tomorrow morning.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's so easy today to buy things. And I think that is one of the reasons we have acquired everything. The other is we are connected all the time to everyone else. So before, like, we'll have a little history lesson, right? Before phones came out, before we could, you know, see everybody on the internet at any time of day, whenever we wanted, you actually had to plan to meet people. I'm of the age where I lived pre-cell phone. So having to like meet up with people, you actually had to like have a moment where you talked to them on the phone before and said, we're going to meet at this corner at this time. And you just went and stood there waiting for people. And if they didn't show up, you had to like find a payphone to call and figure out what happened, or they magically would show up.
It was a simpler time.
Right? I can hardly believe like that has been in my lifetime. And I can hardly believe that that actually ever was my reality. Mm-hmm. Like, I can't imagine going and standing on a corner and not knowing if someone is coming. Right. Like, everybody texts. I'm 5 minutes out. I'm right around the corner. I just parked the car, you know, and if I'm sitting there on a corner, I'm no longer bored, right? I pull up my phone, I can be on Instagram or Facebook or Reddit or wherever, and or listening to a podcast or listening to an audiobook or watching a YouTube video. All of this is at our fingertips any time of day. So I know that doesn't talk so much about stuff, but what happens is as we're taking in all of this information at all times, every day, you then see what other people have. You hear what other people do. You see how other people are living their lives. And I would like to point out quickly, as we're on this subject, that people's social media life is not their real life. Like even myself, right? I try to post content that is real and be realistic with people in their decluttering approach. But even I'm not posting what I look like right when I get out of bed. You know, like you're not seeing my full life, even if I'm trying to give you a realistic slice of it. And so we have to remember that too. When we're looking at other people online and the image they are portraying, it is not everything the end all. Like we need to just take a step back, take a breath. This is getting a lot deeper.
I love it.
Right away, but we're getting real into it. And just know that like we can live without all of this stuff. For centuries, we have lived without as much stuff as we have today. And it's just the ease of buying that has really started that trend, right? Since the 80s, when plastic became really a resource that we use a lot, things have gotten cheaper. And thus, as things get cheaper, people buy more. And then as people buy more, they make more. And so there's more to buy. And it's easy to get caught up in these trends, right? So many trends that come out that are, you know, monthly, weekly, like it started quarterly, right? You've got your big four seasons, and then they get down to like micro trends and smaller trends. And now what was in last week is not in this week, or, you know, so many different things. We've got Pantone colors of the year, and people are wanting to switch up their entire home decor because, you know, the navy blue from last year is out, and now it's some periwinkle blue. I don't even know what the colors are this year. So I'm probably totally off on that. But, you know, it's all of this, right? It's all of the people that like, even myself, I've worked in marketing before, of trying to get people onto your team, onto your side to buy your things. And there's all those messages coming at us all the time, every time of day. Yes, we've gotten much better at cutting out commercials on TV with streaming and, you know, started with the TiVos and the DVRs and the recordings and skipping over the commercials. And now we can just bypass them altogether. We, you know, purchase that subscription. But you're still getting so many messages at you that you might not even realize when we are consuming all of this information online or every time you walk into a store. Like all of that stuff has been put there. It's been studied to work at you psychologically before you even know it, right? And so it's really hard to have that moment of like, but it's so cute, but you don't necessarily have to have it. Yeah, is that helpful? I don't think I got through all of those questions. What other questions do you have on that one?
No, I think that's so helpful. And I'm sitting here turning my mind because, you know, I'm a former experimental psychologist. I think about stimuli in the world all the time. Mm-hmm. And I don't think I had ever quite put my finger on it. It's not exactly like passive consumption, but just the pure volume of incoming stimuli we have now, even if you're not intentionally looking at it or trying to look at it or whatever, it's still impacting your day-to-day experience and potentially your consumption behavior. So I just think that's fascinating from a kind of cognitive science lens. So I will stop talking in that vein, but I just think it's really, really interesting. And so I'm glad you brought that up because...
Oh, we could nerd out on that more if you'd like. I'm
yeah,
game.
I mean, well, and I think it does offer some point of reflection for how one wishes to spend their time in those waiting moments. Like for me, I'm the person who now, like, if I have a good book, I like actually carry it around with me and I'm sitting in the pickup line instead of scrolling. I'm, you know, reading my book, which is amazing, but it kind of depends on whether I have a page turner with me. So it's just interesting. And I'm really, really glad you brought that up because I think there's a level of mindfulness there that all of us could stand to work on.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
Well, the second part of your question, though, was do I have a litmus for acquisition to keep accumulation at bay? So one thing I do that really does help cut back on bringing things into my home is I try to be really cognizant of when I'm going to shop or how often I'm going to shop. So for grocery shopping, I make sure I meal plan so that I don't have to go into the grocery store on a regular basis. We lived in Germany for a while, and you know, the European model is to pick up your fresh groceries every day. And it was really interesting because it was hard for me to switch to that mode. And in fact, I did a terrible job of switching to shopping every day because I hated going into the store every day. But it's just a habit I have continued, right? So if I can meal plan and I can grocery shop once a week, or I really try to push it every 10 days, it does make it so much easier for me to stop those impulse buys. And as the register gets higher and higher, right? Like as that amount that I'm spending in one time goes up at the grocery store, it is easier for me to say no to those impulse buys because I'm already like, it's already going to be $160 in my cart. Like I don't want it to get to 200. So it's easier for me to put those things back knowing that I'm already buying a lot of things. And I do the same thing with other stores. I do the same thing with Costco. I do the same thing with Target. You know, I try really hard to just have one errand day because then it feels like I'm spending a ton of money at once, even if it's the same amount I would have spent, you know, broken out over time and it would have just been in smaller increments. It's I'm quote unquote frugal or cheap in that way that I like, I hate that number getting really big.
Of course.
And so if I can squeeze it all in, then I'm like, okay, you know, I have a little bit of a panic attack of like, oh, that was an expensive day. But it's all stuff we need and it's less of those impulse buys.
Yeah, that's a great tactic. I love that. Well, I want to talk a little bit more about mini wins or different types of tactics. And a listener wrote that they particularly love when I or my guests share mini decluttering tips and wins. And I was interested to see on your website when I was prepping for our conversation, you have a guide called Doable Dozen, 12 easy weekly tasks to help you get and keep a tidy home so you can thrive. I mean, who doesn't want that? So I was wondering, I don't want to give away the farm because I want people to go get the guide, but what do you think is one of the simplest, most impactful tips for getting things in order at home?
Well, so what I love about the Doable Dozen, and it, you can, so it's a free download, so anybody can grab it. I'm not, you know, you can get this for free. And it is the 12 things that I do on a weekly basis. So some of them are daily things. I have 5 daily things, and then I have my 7 weekly wonders so that I try to do one of those 7 things every day. But if I have a day that's tough or a week that's tough, I know I can squeeze them all into one day if I need to, or, you know, over the course of the weekend. So it's really the ability to be flexible, but know what your kind of baseline is, right? So that way you are still making progress. We've talked about on my show with the conversation with the micro wins. And I really do agree that with you in that same thing, that those tiny habits, those things you do on a consistent basis, even if they feel super, super tiny to you, really do make a difference. It sets that level, right, of where you want to be and kind of gives you a springboard to jump off of. So my daily magic 5, I'll tell you what those are. It's I make the bed every morning, right? That way, every time I walk into my room, it just feels like, oh, okay, we're put together here, right? That's the biggest piece of furniture in that room and just makes the space feel tidy and neat. Then my second one is to check the laundry. I'm not somebody that does laundry every day, but I always like to keep just in the back of my mind, know what's going on with the laundry, if that makes sense. You know, it might be a day where I'm like, okay, how are the towels? Okay, I'm going to need to run a load of towels today. Or does our daughter have anything coming up this week that she needs a specific outfit, a specific shirt color or anything like that? Just knowing what's on the calendar, that's actually 4 as I review my calendar. So it kind of ties into the laundry to make sure there's nothing that I'm missing. I hate that panic moment of like, oh my gosh, I totally forgot to do that thing. Or it's midnight, you know, when you wake up in bed and you're like, oh my gosh, tomorrow is this or whatever, right? So my daily magic 5 are kind of helping me not have those panic moments in my life.
I love it. Yeah.
The third one is resetting the kitchen. So as our daughter's having breakfast, I'm unloading the dishwasher and just making sure that we run that every night. So we always have clean dishes in the morning and just kind of making sure the kitchen's ready to go. We do leave our hand drying dishes out overnight. I know some people really hate that, but I just pop them away in the morning and it just resets my kitchen for the day. And then every day we do a 5-minute tidy up as a family. What I love about this is it gives us a moment as a family to connect and say, hey, we're doing this together, right? Because it's important for all of us to contribute to the home. And in 5 minutes, since there's three of us, it's actually 15 minutes of work time because we're each doing five minutes together. And so it really compounds. I know, right? Isn't it great? You only have to do 5 minutes, but it compounds to 15. So you would have 20 minutes in your home. And it's really nice because you can then see that everybody's working toward a common goal. And it just having that 5 minutes, knowing I'm going to have that at the end of the day, it just allows, because I work from home, it allows me to then take a breather and not stress about like, oh gosh, you know, when we left this morning, our daughter left this thing out on the table, the kitchen table. Well, I don't have to worry about putting it away myself. I know she can put it away later because we were, you know, running a minute behind for school. So she didn't have time to put it away this morning. That kind of thing comes up all the time. So that's kind of where the doable dozen is. And the guide kind of walks you through, like, I believe that everybody's home and life is different. We all have the things that are important to us. Mine is just a good example. So if you've never done this before, it gives you some place to start, but I have it where you can create your own daily magic five and your own 7 weekly wonders, because what works in my home might be totally different than what works in your home.
Oh, I love it. I love it. I love it so much. That's wonderful. All right, Diana, we're going to take a bunch more listener questions, but we're going to do that after a quick break.
As you know, I value stories and the connection that the sharing of stories can bring so much. And if you're looking for a gift for Mother's Day, check out StoryWorth. StoryWorth is all about celebrating and preserving stories. Every week, StoryWorth emails a loved one of your choosing a question prompt that you pick. For example, how did you decide when to have children? And what was your mom like when you were a child? Your loved one simply responds to the email with a story of any length. You will receive copies of these emails, and after 1 year, StoryWorth compiles the stories and any photos provided into a keepsake book. Funny enough, I was just chatting with a neighbor who told me that her mom gifted copies of her StoryWorth album to immediate family members, and literally everyone was crying, in a good, loving way. I loved this example because while yes, StoryWorth is a great gift between a parent and kid, in this case, it was a gift from sister to sister that then was shared across generations. Give all the moms in your life a unique, heartfelt gift you'll all cherish for years, StoryWorth. Right now, save $10 on your first purchase when you go to storyworth.com/edit. That's storyworth.com/edit to save $10 on your first purchase. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Do you struggle with boundaries and the general complexities of peopling? Relationships are necessary to our well-being, and some relationships are just, well, complicated. A good chunk of the work I have done in therapy centers on relationships, how to own my part of the story, how to let go of relationships that are toxic, and how to navigate challenging relationships in a way that doesn't drain me. And all of this work helps me show up better for myself and also as a partner, mom, friend, family member, and business owner. If you're thinking of starting therapy, check out BetterHelp. This online therapy platform was designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/edit today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/edit.
Hello, friends. We are back with the wonderful Diana Yates. And I'm getting all sorts of ideas right now, which is so awesome. And I have another listener question for you. Okay. This listener wrote in with the request, can you share tips for managing clutter when your spouse is messy and clutter doesn't bother them? So what are your thoughts on how to handle this very real and probably aggravating issue?
Oh my gosh. This one is so common, right? I think a lot of times we end up with partners who are really good complements for ourselves, but that doesn't mean they're carbon copies. So they generally do things differently. My husband and I are no different in that we generally have the same end goals, but the way we get there are total opposites, 100% as opposite as you can be. Like on the Myers-Briggs test, we are the opposite letters. I'm right-handed, he's left-handed. So, you know, we just come at things completely different. I'm an extrovert, he's an introvert. So that is definitely tricky. And one thing that I have learned over the years of working with someone who's the complete opposite of me is that you have to find whatever that common ground is. You have to find your joint why. Why do you want the house to be clean, right? Why is the clutter bothering you? And get to the answer yourself first to figure out, like, how would this pertain to them? Like, maybe they are just so tired at the end of the day that they just come home and they kick their shoes off and they can't be bothered, right? Because they're just so tired. Well, is there an easy way for you to not have to do anything extra for them, but just have a basket for the shoe? So when they kick it off, it just, they can pop it right there. It doesn't have to go in a closet. It's not behind a closed door. It's not something. Is there just an intermediary step, right? A hook to put the keys, a hook to put the hat, so that it's all there exactly where they want it to be, but it's not an extra huge hurdle for them to get over. Because I think sometimes, and I'm speaking from experience, so this is not against anybody. I've done this myself. I have this like perfect end goal of what I want something to be, and I try to go from 0 to 100 overnight. And it's not realistic, right? I am not able to maintain that change for a long period of time, just like if you were trying to go on a diet or trying to start an exercise routine and you've never lifted weights and you want to like go from being, you know, a scrawny high school kid to Arnold Schwarzenegger, like that's not going to happen overnight. Just in the same way, you're not going to go from our house is a complete mess to it looks like it belongs in a magazine, right? Overnight. It's not realistic. So having your end goal of like, why do you want it? Is it because, you know, in the morning you're trying to get your stuff together and you're tripping over shoes? Like, you know, where we take our shoes off is on my way to where my Peloton bike is. So if there's shoes all over and I get up and I use the Peloton at 5 a.m. and it's dark and I'm not turning lights on because I don't want to wake up everybody in the house. Well, if I'm tripping over shoes that are rubber on a hard floor, that's like, that's dangerous for me, right? So that's a moment of like, hey, it's more that I don't want to trip on the shoes because I'm getting up in the morning and I don't want to wake everyone up. And if I trip, then I'm probably going to scream or I'm going to hurt myself and then I'm going to wake everyone up, right? So we can kind of have these moments of like, why are we really wanting to do the thing? And then one other part is also coming up with zones. So like if you have a zone, kind of like we just said, like a clutter drop zone for when someone's coming in the door, having a place for their things to live and it not needing to be up to your tidiness standard, right? So like maybe there's just a place that they can just drop all their stuff and that's where their stuff lives and it's great. It's a happy medium. But also having zones, right? Like if they have, my husband has his side of the closet, I don't mess with his side of the closet because it doesn't affect me, right? His side of the bed, that's his side of the bed. He gets to put whatever he wants on that nightstand and it's okay, right? Like if it's not bothering him, I need it to not allow it to bother me unless it's in a shared space where we have decided like, no, look, the kitchen counters, that's a shared space. That's not everyone's dumping ground. So we need to keep it this particular way. But I don't mess with the areas that are his quote unquote, you know, areas and he doesn't mess with my areas. I get to keep them as tidy and neat as I want. And if he doesn't want his desk to be super tidy, then he can let it become a mess until he wants to clean it up. That kind of a thing.
Yeah, that's so great. And it's so funny, Deanna, in both of our conversations, I feel like we're going into different spaces than the tactical, which is great. That's what I'm all about. But one thing that your comment there, your recommendation about the why that I was thinking of is that I also think it's very important to at least assume positive intent from your cohabitants and then ask, because I remember I used to, I love clean counters. They make me happy and they're really hard to achieve when you're living amidst other humans. And at one point I found myself really aggravated. Like, why are people putting glasses like not in the sink or not right in the dishwasher, but just out here on the counter. Like, why is this happening? Mm-hmm. And then I asked my husband about it. It just came up at one point, and he said, oh, sometimes I won't put things in the sink when they don't need like a, they're not really dirty enough for the dishwasher. They don't need a heavy wash, but I don't want them to get schmutz from all the other stuff that's in the sink on them. So this is like, it was kind of like a staging situation. And I was like, oh, that actually makes sense. Because then if we hand wash it real, it'll be much faster to just do it that way. So it was a humbling moment where I realized, okay, I have this, I'm spinning this narrative about dishes in my head. That's really taking up more brain space than it should occupy. And, you know, he has a positive and rational approach to how he's thinking about the dishes. And so we can coexist on that. And it just made life a lot easier after.
Yes. Thank you for bringing that part up. Yes. About, yeah, don't assume negative intent, right? And it might not even be the positive intent, like you found out in that instance where there is a rhyme and a reason and why he's doing it that way. Generally, I find that with my husband too, because again, we do things totally differently. So however I'm thinking about he's going to do it, it's probably the opposite. But yeah, it also could just be that they weren't, it's not negative against you necessarily, right? Like, we definitely need to make sure we think about, is this true? Is this the reason? Is the thing I have in my head the thing that's actually happening? There's a book by Byron Katie, and it's Loving What Is, I think is the title of the book. And she has these four questions to ask. And that's the first one, right? You write down like all your grievances or like the things that are really driving you crazy, these negative thoughts you have. And you ask that first question, is this true, right? Mm-hmm. Do I know 100% that this is true? Like, do I know 100% that my husband is kicking his shoes off by the door because he just doesn't care about what the house looks like? No, you don't. It could be that he's just exhausted or he's tired. He didn't even think about it, right? It might not be the negative against us in particular. It could just be something else, or there could be positive intent with it, like you said, with the staging of the dishware and things in the kitchen. So yes, having these conversations and coming at them from a place of empathy, coming at them from a place of like, hey, curiosity, just, you know, curious why the dishes are out this way. I'm just like, enlighten me, like, let me know what's the reason behind that? Because I'm sure there's, you know, something. I'm just curious because I don't understand it.
Yeah.
Can you help me see why? You know, and just being more open and honest and yeah, not taking everything personally. I am a sucker for some reality TV sometimes, and we're currently watching a dating show. And it is interesting to see how people do get in that negative mindset. And they're such character studies for me. That's why I love watching them so much. Cause I'm just like, oh my gosh.
Fascinating.
It's so fascinating. My husband and I got together when we were 20 years old. So we didn't really date in the adult world. Right. So it's just so fascinating to watch other people that are still clearly children, but,
that's so funny.
But yeah, it's so, I just love watching like how people interact. And that is one of the things where if you watch people that are more open and more empathetic and willing to hear other people's side of the story, it's amazing how much we can learn about them and ourselves at the same time versus putting up this immediate defense of like, well, you know, I don't know. Why are you doing this to me? And maybe it's not to us, but
yeah,
that got a little deeper too.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. Well, since we're on the topic of other humans, let's talk about the small ones. I know you have some content on your site about this, but I would be curious if you have a top tip for people who are dreading decluttering with their kids due to the high likelihood of a meltdown.
Keep it fun. Keep it light. I mean, that's the first and foremost. You've got to try to, again, coming at it from their angle. I'm not going to lie. It's funny because I talk about decluttering all the time, but there are very few people that actually like decluttering. There are very few people for that, where that is the thing that they're just like, yes, I love going through my stuff and making these hard decisions. Nobody really likes doing it. We all like the end goal, right? We want the clean house. We want the less stress. We don't want to have to clean as much. We want just to feel that lightness and the breath of fresh air in our homes. That's what we're after. It's really hard to teach that to kids or get them on board with that concept. That's just so out there for them. Mm-hmm. So one, let's start with stopping the income, like the incoming, the inflow of the stuff, because it's so much harder to get rid of something once it's in our home. I learned this way early on because we were talking about how your daughter is highly sensitive. So is ours, your oldest. And we only have one and she is highly sensitive. So I learned early on that every rock, every stick, every little nugget of like she found a gem on the side of the road, like, you know, as we were on a walk, like all of that stuff was important to her. So everything that made it into our house, it was really hard to let it go. She knew exactly where it came from, who she was with, where it was, you know, and creates a story around all of it. So she is highly sensitive. So letting go of things for her has always been a struggle, which I totally understand, right? Like just as we feel attached to and connected to and protective of our homes, right? And how mm-hmm. we are in our homes and the things we have in our house. That's how they feel about their stuff, about their toys. It's where they get to self-express. It's where, you know, it's the things that matter the most to them because that is quote unquote theirs. So we have to think about it. Like, how would we feel if all of a sudden somebody walked into our closet and started pulling clothes out and was like, you never wear those. Let's get mm-hmm. rid of them. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, that's really like, you'd be like, excuse me, get yeah. out. What are you doing? Like, no, thank you. And so we can't do that to our kids either. So we try to have a very gentle approach to it and also just make it a part of our everyday. So she constantly sees me modeling the behavior of like, oh gosh, you know, I never wear this shirt. I'm going to go ahead and put it in our little donation. And we have a central donation bin so everybody can see what goes in there. And also the trick, go ahead and put something in there. Just like if you were playing on the street, like playing music on the street and you wanted somebody to give you tips, you start with a little bit of money in there. Do the same thing with your declutter box. Mm. Put something in there because it will attract other people to put more things in mm-hmm. there. Law of attraction for our stuff. It's great.
I love it. I love it.
And but yeah, so you just have to make it more fun. So if you are going through the clothes, right? And this is might be an easy place because kids grow so fast. And if you don't have another one coming up behind them, you can just be like, hey, look, you are growing. And kids love to be big and grow, right? Like mm-hmm. this is their jam. So it's so great to get rid of the littler things. So clothes are an easy place to start, but then make it fun for them. Have your donation box or your basket or your bin or whatever, and have them shoot hoops and see how many clothes they can actually make into the basket on the first try, right? Mm-hmm. Just little things that make it more exciting because nobody likes to just sit in a room and be like, you want this? You don't want this? What do you, you know? That goes so fast. But if you can be like, okay, you said no to that. Can you make it in that basket? Ooh, you made it. Push the box back a little bit further. Can you make this one, you know, and just have fun with it as much as you can. Cause again, it's not really a fun thing for everyone.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a yeah. genius idea. I love that.
Thank you.
Okay. Well, listen, I have another listener question for you. This person writes, and I'm really fascinated to hear what your answer is. They write, I'd love to hear how people regift. As I've decluttered, mm-hmm. I've taken to regifting more, but I frankly still have embarrassment about it sometimes and worry that the recipient might be offended. Okay, what are your thoughts on this?
Okay, regifting. This is tricky. But I'm a fan, but here's where I'm a fan. One, it has to be something that you actually like, right? Like you can't just like regift things that you're like, oh, this is kind of crappy. I just don't really like it. Mm-hmm. Unless it's something that other person has been asking for or really wants, or you know that like that's their jam, right? Mm-hmm. If it's something that you're just casting off as like a hand-me-down, well, that's different. That's not the same. That go ahead and donate something like that. But I actually have a pair of earrings that I got. So I'm 44 now. I got these when I was 19. Mm-hmm. So I still know about, like, I still have them. And they were a regift from a friend. And she was, it was one Christmas, and they were, you know, she told me the story behind them, right? She said, hey, like, I have these earrings, and I just, every time I see them, they remind me of you. And I thought that you would like them. And I thought that, you know, I wanted to gift them to you. So if that kind of a sentiment that came behind it, right, was super special, right? That made me think, like, oh, wow. Like, she thought of me as she, you know, as she saw these, she thought of me and wants me to have them, right? There's a difference there, right? Can you see the difference between, like, hey, I don't want this thing, do you want it? And hey, I have this thing and I really like it, but it reminds me so much of you, or I just really think you would like it.
Yep.
And then without having they don't have the pressure, they don't have to keep it, or they don't have to have it. Like, just being able to be a little more open and vulnerable and be like, but if you don't want them, that is completely acceptable too. Like, I think we get really wrapped up in gifts, and it's tricky. But I do think that I try to think of, like, when I gift someone something, do I ever go back to their house and, like, audit and be like, hey, you still got that thing I gave you 5 years ago? No, nobody does that. So why do we think people are going to do that when they gift us something? Right.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with you. And I'm, you know, for this listener who wrote, in case they want my opinion, I am pro regifting, or I'm fine with it, as long as it's something the person you are regifting it to, it's something they would really love or enjoy. You know, just along the lines of what you said, it can't just be a I want to get rid of something today and here it is.
Yeah. Totally. Yes. Yeah. I do think that there's a big difference there. And it might be actually subtle when you think about the actual item or the actual act of regifting something. That might feel somewhat subtle, but I think there's a big point there in the intention behind the thing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, or there might be something that you have if you are a new parent, you know, and you have a friend that's also a new parent, you know, and they're a little bit behind you on the, you know, timeline. You might have something that you have that is perfectly good, because babies grow out of things so fast that you're like, hey, we got this thing. It was so wonderful. Like, I really loved having this, but, you know, we're kind of out of that stage here. I would love for you to be able to use it. And either you're gifting it to them completely, or you're like, but if I have another one, would you mind giving it back?
Yeah.
Right. That might also be totally acceptable. Yeah. I think we need to open up our minds when it comes to this idea of everything having to be new, and, you know, really, like, leaning on our community and our friend group and our families more. This is what people used to do, right? If we go back to the beginning, where I was talking about big culture shifts we've had and big, you know, changes, like, people used to reuse and regift and recycle all their stuff all the time. And I think we've just gotten into this idea that things have to be new and sparkly in order for them to hold value. And I don't think that that is always true.
I agree. And this is a topic for a totally separate conversation, perhaps. But my second child, Violet, was unexpected. And I had literally figured, okay, I guess I can't get pregnant anymore. I gave away all of my baby stuff that I had been holding on to. And a month later, of course, I found out I was pregnant. And so when one of my girlfriends was like, we need to have a shower for you, like, you don't have anything anymore. And I said, I'm fine with a shower on the contingency that it's a secondhand baby shower. And I only want to take stuff if people have junk in there, not junk, if people have things that they're looking to pass along in their basements.
Yeah.
I want to help be the receptacle for that. And it was awesome.
That is so
I wrote
cool.
a whole post on it, and it went sort of viral because people were like, wait, you can do that? You can have a secondhand shower? I'm like, of course you can.
I love that so much. And also, I love that, like, by the time you had your second one, how much less did you have, right?
Oh my gosh. Yeah. We got by with a lot less. Yeah. We didn't need nearly as much stuff. So
yeah. It's interesting.
Yeah. Okay. I have a couple more questions for you, Deanna. We're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back.
When it comes to raising kids, there's so much to consider. Things like, what do we feed them? When do we feed them? How do they sleep? What does it look like to raise kind kids? How does their nervous system work? How do I keep myself calm? What are my triggers? There's so much that comes into play. And we are distilling all of that information for you at Voices of Your Village podcast, where we bring experts in the field of early childhood and education and psychology and across the board so that you don't have to comb the internet for information. You get to show up and hang out and have shame-free, judgment-free conversations and insights into what it looks like to raise kind, empathetic, emotionally intelligent humans. I'm Alyssa Blask Campbell. I have a master's degree in early childhood education. I'm a mom of two, and I am walking this journey right alongside you doing this work. Come hang out with me at Voices of Your Village, and we can dive into real conversations with actionable tips.
If you're a parent, I invite you to join us at the Mindful Mama podcast, where it's all about becoming a less irritable, more joyful parent. With sometimes hilarious and always thought-provoking experts and friends, at Mindful Mama, we know that you cannot give what you do not have. And when you have calm and peace within, then you can give it to your children. I'm Hunter Clark Fields, and I can't wait to see you there. Listen in to the Mindful Mama podcast.
Hello, friends. We are back with Deanna Yates. We're answering all the questions. This is so exciting. I want to talk about maintenance. So we know we've talked about it on this show. We've talked about your show. Stuff creep is no joke. I would love for you to share a top tip or two for how to maintain order once you have lovingly decluttered a space.
Oh boy, I think we have to change our expectations about this.
I love it.
I think a lot of times we believe declutter is one and done, right? But if you are a human being and you are living and you are accumulating new stuff, I think you have to understand that decluttering is just a part of life, right? Mm-hmm. Yes, we might have that first initial purge where we're really starting to think about stuff differently. We're changing our mindsets. We're understanding that we don't need to buy everything under the sun to be happy. We are starting to, you know, really hone in on experiences over things. And all of this is fantastic, right? But this is kind of that first pass. Then we understand that life is going to happen. And guess what? Our children are still going to grow and they go through different phases. And we go through different phases, right? I'm constantly trying new things. And, you know, that's one of the things I love about having a decluttered space is it gives me room to try a different hobby if I want, or, you know, be able to let something go that like, hey, I really, you know, for a while I was doing this thing and now I'm going to do this other thing, right? Or I tried that and I just didn't like it. Like I tried to scrapbook, you know, back in the day, not my jam. Guess what? Not my jam. And that is totally fine. Being able to let go of that kind of stuff once we realize it's not for us, I think that is what that initial declutter is really helpful for. But to maintain a space, let's talk about that. If you can set up a system for a way for you to kind of deal with that everyday stuff that's coming in. So let's talk about kind of how I deal with my mail, right? Because paper is a big one. I mean, there's constant paper coming into people's homes. Mm-hmm. Well, our mailbox is, it feeds right into the garage. So we'll grab our stuff. My recycle bin is right out there. So the stuff that doesn't even need me to look at it goes right in the recycle bin before it even comes in the house. Mm-hmm. Then I have an area where on a perfect day, I'm opening the mail and I'm going to put it where it needs to go, whether that's in its action bin or the file, you know, file it away right away. Fantastic. But let's be honest, that's not my everyday, right? My everyday is it goes in the inbox. And then once a week, I can look at that stuff, right? Once a week, I can set aside 5 to 10 minutes to deal with the mail. And that's when I will make note of any of the action items that we need to do or take care of them right away, like schedule a bill to go out on a certain day. I will file the things away. I will make my notes on those bills and things like that. So I think making sure we build in time, knowing that decluttering a decluttered space needs to be maintained. It's not something, unfortunately, we can't just set it up and be like, okay, walk away. Mm-hmm. I'm done. And I never have to come back to it. And just embracing that thought of just like, all right, but now that I have less stuff, it will only take me a couple minutes. Mm-hmm. Where before, if I had all my stuff, I would be overwhelmed. I wouldn't want to touch that space. I would just kind of bury my head in the sand and wait for it to be overwhelming, or wait for a moment where I had to find a piece of paper. I had to find something that was lost in the abyss of that section of my life and then go find it, right? And then deal with it. But it would just be that mountain that you had to climb instead of just this little hill of like, okay, just put it away, you know, just sweep it up and take care of it. So I think that is one of the best things, is just make sure you schedule a day. Like, I have an admin day where, like I said, on Fridays, I deal with my paperwork. So I try to take a little bit of time and I build in a couple days. We talked about this, about that errand day, right? Mm-hmm. So having that one day I run my errands, well, then guess what? That's the day where all my groceries come in. And because I'm not grocery shopping every day, I also take a minute to clear out any of the old food that's in the refrigerator that I know, like, okay, now that we've got all new food, no one's going to eat that thing, or no one should eat that thing. Let's get rid of that. And then putting in the new groceries. So it kind of always stays in this moment, like this stasis, right? Of like, it's good enough. And so that makes me happy.
Yeah. Yeah. That's great. And I just like the general real life reframing of, you know, this is just what it is. And you will be able to do it more quickly if you have less. And, you know, life requires maintenance. That's just life. Well, Deanna, this has been wonderful. And I have one more quick question for you. At the end of each show, I ask my guest to share what I call your next edit. It's a super actionable tip that listeners can consider doing right away after they finish listening to this conversation. So in the context of our conversation, whether it's something you already mentioned or a different tip that you have in mind, I would love for you to share your next edit for this episode.
Yeah, sure. So one of my favorite things is a 15-minute declutter, but I'm not even going to make you do 15 minutes today. I want you to start, if you're starting fresh and you're like, I just need to declutter something, I want you to set your timer for 5 minutes. And I want you to take a box and a bag, a trash bag and a box, and go around and get rid of all the trash you find in one space. Like, just pick one area that kind of just drives you a little crazy. And we're going to get that one area to look so much better in 5 minutes. So set your timer on your phone, throw any garbage, anything that is, you know, not donatable into that bag, anything that you're just like, nope, I am not using this. I haven't touched this in a year or 6 months. The easy things, put them in that box and put all of it either in your car or by the door so that it goes out and, you know, throw the garbage away right away. But the box, you know, wherever it's going to be convenient for you to take it to a donation center. I know, you know, if you're not living in the suburbs like I do, maybe the car isn't going to be the easiest for you. So wherever it's easiest for you to say like, okay, I'm donating this, and then pick a time to donate it. And you can do all of that in 6 minutes, because, right, 5 minutes of decluttering and the 1 minute to schedule it.
I love it. I love it. That's so wonderful. Deanna, this has been a joy. It's been practical. It's been deep. It's been all the things. And I really appreciate you taking the time to join me on the mic today. This was really fun.
Oh, this was a blast. I'd come back anytime, Christine.
Wonderful. Wonderful. Take care. Friends, wasn't that wonderful? You'll find the show notes for this episode, including links to resources and related episodes, at edityourlifeshow.com. As ever, I would love to hear your thoughts and questions. Come say hello on Instagram or Facebook at edityourlifeshow, or send an email to edityourlifeshow@gmail.com. I would also be grateful if you would drop Edit Your Life a review on Apple Podcasts or tell a pod-loving friend about the show. Thanks for listening.
Hey there, I'm Debbie Reber, the founder of Tilt Parenting and the author of the book Differently Wired. The mission of Tilt is to change the way neurodivergence, whether that's having a learning disability, having ADHD, being gifted, autistic, or some combination of all of the above, is perceived and experienced, so differently wired kids and the parents like us raising them can truly thrive. On the Tilt Parenting podcast, I get to talk with authors, therapists, educators, and parenting experts who are committed to this mission. I ask the questions my listeners are most curious about when it comes to supporting our kids. And in turn, my guests share strategies for challenges, out-of-the-box ideas for navigating school, best practices for therapies, tips for advocating, and so many thoughtful insights on what it really takes to help our kids grow up feeling seen and respected so they can create awesome lives for themselves. I know that raising a differently wired kid can feel overwhelming and isolating, but I promise you, you are not alone, and it can feel so much better. If you're on this parenting journey, come listen to Tilt Parenting. Together, we can shift this paradigm and show up for our exceptional kids with hope, possibility, and joy.